Welcome to Business Watch. Well, following last week's pre-close update from HyProp, a few analysts have really turned a little more bullish on the consumer as it revealed footfall is back to pre-pandemic levels. And with masks now a thing of the past, there is some emerging optimism. But that obviously needs to be tempered against last week's three decades low consumer confidence number. So the big question is, what is the real retail state of the nation? To talk about that now, I'm joined by Nielsen IQ Retail Strategy Lead, John Emery, Independent Analyst, Chris Gilmore, and Mongezi Mtati, brand strategist at Roger Wilco. John, Nielsen IQ South Africa has released its State of the Retail Nation report recently, and it shows total annual sales of 519 billion rand at South African retail outlets. So that's the last month, 4 weeks ending May of 2022. So that's really good growth, 13% annual increase. At a more focused level, what does that reveal about the health of the grocery retail sector?
Yeah, 100%. I mean, we are seeing some healthy stimulation out of the retail environment. I think some of the factors driving that is we're seeing liquor sales and tobacco sales re-emerging in the basket, which obviously was net zero at a certain point during 2020 and even into 2021, which is giving a lot of buoyancy to the market. Having said that, in the latest month, where we're not seeing any of those factors driving growth, we are still seeing quite healthy 10% growth, which is ahead of CPI. There's a number of factors stimulating that, but one of the biggest things, and you mentioned there, footfall up in stores, we really are seeing a big shift of where people are spending their money. As one of the tactical ways to save, they're spending less out of home, and they're spending, and they have to spend more in home. We still have to feed our families, we still have all those basic expenses, and as those things keep increasing in price, we're seeing that growth coming through the retail sector.
And it was always going to be one of those interesting things, Chris, to see from a retail perspective just how sticky some of those COVID trends are going to be. Everyone's saying that we're going to be shopping a lot more in-home, the likes of Checkers 60/60 and all of the others following in terms of that online retail experience. But the early evidence seems to show that we are going back to some of our old shopping habits.
No, absolutely. Look, I think there's no doubt about it. The pandemic has acted as a catalyst. It's spurred the online shopping phenomenon to an extent that might never have happened otherwise. South Africans love shopping, make no mistake, and you've got some of the highest levels of penetration of shopping miles per capita of any country in the world. And so, you know, they want to get out and go back and do a lot of shopping again. Mm. As you rightly say, there's been a lot of reticence. People were scared of going back into big crowds and this type of thing. They're losing that fear now. Now, this Omicron variant has been shown to be a relatively mild variant. It doesn't matter which BA1 or BA2 or whatever you go into. It's not really the big nasty killer that Delta was. So I think people have lost their fear. And I'm seeing that in the UK as well. You know, they're going back into shopping. And the online side of things, from a retailer's perspective, you don't really make much money out of it, if any at all. It's a loss leader. So it looks good on paper. It looks wonderful. It shows how good you are at tech. But does it actually generate an awful lot of money? No, it's not. It's not profitable. From a consumer's perspective, it's wonderful. And it's great. But so I think it will gather pace over time, yes, people will largely go back to the real thing. I think
it's not going to displace the way we've done things in the past just yet. Mongezi, I think almost half of South Africa's urban population lives in the Khasi, in the township economy, and so understanding the retail driving forces there is critically important. The likes of Gigi Alcock is particularly good here, and you've now produced this fantastic in-depth bit of research, the South African Township CX report. Just tell me a little bit more about this and what you hope to understand about the township consumer.
Thank you. Thanks, Michael. So one of the things, talk about how we firstly do the research. I mean, we talked to over 1,400 people across 9 provinces and townships in the country, and we also do some on-the-ground research. What we have found is that there's increased optimism within the township economy, within the Gasi economy, in terms of just buying from the local or informal sort of economy, and supporting the local spaza shops, supporting the informal sector, and buying within those spaces. We're also seeing that a lot of South Africans in townships would much rather buy local over international fashion brands, where 74% of them are telling us that if local fashion brands were available in stores to buy using a store account, they would much rather buy those. And the 74% of them are telling us this. And we are definitely seeing a trend of local fashion brands being more and more international in their outlook, becoming more global, playing on the global stage, and an increase in creative distribution channels within the spaza shop and informal economy. Because one of the biggest things, especially from an FMCG and consumer sort of perspective, is that distribution channels are complex to sort of supply the spaza shop or the informal sector, and there are creative ways in which these store owners or these entrepreneurs in townships are finding ways to group themselves together to utilize that group buying power in order to supply the local customer. There are also some other alternatives that are coming up in terms of just alternatives such as ordering food within the township economy from a local trader or from a local fast food store, where big brand food delivery services aren't available. So there are some of these alternatives that people are finding and building.
That is really interesting, Mongezi. Just to build on that, John, I saw you nodding. What are you picking up in terms of the Nielsen research from consumer tastes and preferences towards local brands?
So what's very interesting to see within the local economy is we've definitely seen a huge stimulation out of the traditional trade. And Mongezi mentioned spaza stores and everything. And we're seeing them grow almost double that of the formal retailers, which really shows our shoppers are shifting a little bit back to their pre-pandemic shopping styles. They're looking for a little bit more of that convenience, some smaller top-up purchases during the week. Having said that, we know that shoppers are actively reducing the number of retail outlets and retailers that they shop at, some of them researching those deals beforehand and buying significantly more on promotion. What we do see is a massive drive for local manufacturer growth. And we're seeing some of the biggest manufacturer in totality in South Africa being retail private label, which really shows how everyone is supporting these great offerings that the retailers have been able to create in South Africa that cater for the South African consumer. So there's a few different emerging trends across formal and informal retail that really are stimulating growth for the local economy.
And it stands out, Chris, often at the pick and pay results, I think it was, you would have that slide just showing the size of the informal economy. And I think, if you were to take all four listed grocery retailers, still only half of what we see in that informal economy in terms of market cap. So it is an absolutely huge market that, and I think some interesting trends for the likes of TFG, for example, that's beefing up its local capacity to source local and probably invest in local brands.
Yeah. Look, Michael, I think a number of things emerge from this. I mean, in his valedictory speech when he led just before leaving Pick and Pay, Richard Brasher did a thing showing how big the low end of the market is. And without actually wishing to go right into the township segment per se, that is where the growth is going to be. And that is why Pick and Pay is putting so much store on Boxer, okay? Yeah. Now, Boxer in normal global terms would be referred to as a limited assortment retailer. They do about 3,000 SKUs. It's very similar to what Aldi and Lidl does, okay? And to your point about private label, they do a lot more private label than the likes of a normal Pick and Pay or a ShopRite or a Spar, whatever. But it's still nowhere near the global average of maybe 40-50%. So there's huge potential to get there to do a lot more in the way of private label. Mm-hmm. However, unfortunately, the capacity of the producers to come to the party is kind of limited. And I'm going to mention one of my favorite companies. I'm being incredibly sarcastic now. Tiger Brands. Oh. They have this stubborn, absolute refusal to enter the private label market for fear that they'll dilute their national brand. And unless and until large companies like that really get roll their sleeves up and come to the party, I think unfortunately the capacity is going to remain fairly limited.
That is very interesting around the private label brands. I want to come back to the opportunity in what you've just spoken about, Mongezi, on both sides here for local manufacturers and local brand owners to tap into this desire by Khasi consumers to purchase local, but also that we're seeing this big growth in e-commerce. So there's also an opportunity for businesses in that value chain to provide solutions in the Khasi economy. How do you see brands responding to this?
I think there's still a dependence from the brand side in terms of just using the usual or known e-commerce platforms or sites to buy. And the reason for that is because they've obviously built the infrastructure, they've built themselves up, and they've built their reputation to being reliable. One of the things that we find in the report is that a lot of people have used the likes of, instance of Takealot. They've used Takealot quite a bit, and we know that Takealot delivers in townships, whereas when you look at the supermarkets themselves or some of the other stores, that deliver in suburbs don't have a similar thing in townships. So if I'm at work ordering groceries for the office, I can't do the same for my family at home in Foster Rest or any other township, but I'm used to the same kind of service. So what we are seeing coming into the e-commerce space or encroaching into that space is the use of WhatsApp for delivery, is the use of other platforms that enable people to either send money on mobile and use a mobile platform as an alternative to the big delivery. Because at the end of the day, what you're looking for is a basket of groceries. So it matters that it's branded, but what you're looking for is to buy groceries. So if you can WhatsApp someone to pick up groceries for you at these stores at a premium, send them money, that's what we are seeing as an alternative coming up into less informal, but into the e-commerce space, or at least buying online.
And the ability to do that as well is perfectly encapsulated, I thought, by ShopRite in the way it's using its data now also to deliver value to consumers. But there does seem to be a gap in terms of that last mile. I just want to build on that, John, when it comes to value and what are consumers looking for in this environment. We know petrol price is set to go over 25 rand a litre. Don't even talk to me about diesel. I'm putting my V6 on the market. I just can't do it anymore. But what is this impact having on consumer wallet, on consumers now going out there looking for value?
So we can see a huge amount of pressure on the consumer. Just take something like cooking oil. I think it's probably the most perfect example of where we're seeing this extreme inflation, not quite at the hyperinflation levels yet, but you're looking at 30 to 40% inflation just on one category. And I looked at a little bit of data earlier this morning, and as a result, cooking oil sales have started declining. Finally, we saw a little bit of stockpiling, a little bit of volume growth out of the category still, but coming into the latest month, we've actually seen it tip over as people have stopped buying and started pulling out of the category. I think some of the other factors we're seeing is we know we're trying to make our baskets and our rands and cents stretch longer. And we're seeing this in our households that we survey as well, where historically there's always been a gap in terms of how much consumers were spending and how much they were getting. And what we've seen is this gap close. So people are spending more every single month, and they continue to spend significantly more than they did in 2019 and early 2020. However, they're not getting more for those rands and cents. It makes logical sense. But when something like frozen chicken is seeing inflation of 14, 15%, we're not cutting back our consumption of chicken by 14, 15%. At best, we're cutting back half of that, and the rest of that money is being dissolved and taken by the retailers and being lost into the supply chain. And on the flip of it, if we look at the latest data from Stats, they say we're not seeing salary increases keeping up with these high inflation numbers that we're seeing with interest rates going up and everything that's happening. We know that the consumer continues to see more pressure. As a result, we've seen the basket increase slightly, year on year, around 10% in terms of the average basket size. It's now 131 rand per trip. It sounds relatively small, but when you consider that there's 16 million households in South Africa, you can see that it's a significant amount of spend on a monthly basis. What is interesting, we're also seeing some other sort of trends, and we did some other research, and shoppers are actively preparing for their shop. So they're researching the best deals there. But historically, what we saw was shoppers would go to multiple stores to leverage those deals. Now, with the cost of fuel and all the other factors at play, they're going to the place that they can get the best basket deal. So they're not tactically shopping across multiple retailers to leverage five or six promotions. They're looking for kind of like the best general offering that they can get. And I think we can see that in stores for ourselves with the number of price flashes on shelf. When you go into in any store, Checkers or Pick n Pay, almost everything is on promotion these days.
Yeah, but it's a promotion fest out there at the moment. If you walk through South Africa's stores, Chris, but it just shows you the sort of pressure that consumers are under. If you look at this from the retailer perspective and to say which retail groups are best positioned to capitalize in this environment, out of your ShopRite, Pick n Pay, Spar, the usual three, which would you say is ideally capitalized to gain market share at a time when consumers are clearly focusing on that basket value?
I think if we're talking about gaining market share per se, then Pick n Pay is probably best suited if you believe that their strategy is going to come to fruition. I mean, Pieter Boone has kind of staked his reputation on this in terms of rolling out the boxers, doubling the number of boxers in the next 3 to 4 years, going for this Project Red thing somewhere in between the normal Pick n Pay and a boxer. Because I think he got a bit of a fright. If you look at that strategy session, see how they've been lagging the other two, particularly. So if you believe that that strategy is going to work, then I think they have the greatest potential. Having said that, ShopRite just keeps on demonstrating. It's an amazing ability to keep on rising to the challenge. They've been pulling back from the rest of Africa. They've been concentrating more on local South Africa, and their commitment to technology is easily the best in the sector. So, they're armed better than just about anybody else. So it's going to be a tough one. Spar, I think, yeah, look, Spar, it's in the price. It's half the PE of the other two. So it's cheap, relatively speaking. So there's probably a bit of upside in Spar, I suspect. But I don't think it has the same kind of gravitas as the other two.
Yeah, and one, as I mentioned earlier, just has to look at how ShopRite is executing on the way it's using its in-store data and that loyalty card to now push targeted deals through to consumers and doing that, I think, quite effectively. Mongezi, coming back to your research and looking at what consumers are looking for in terms of their convenience, obviously, transport and proximity are keys here. What are the other drivers that are influencing consumer decisions on where they go and spend their hard-earned rands?
I think there are two areas in the report that address this. I mean, there are quite a few, but there are two areas that you'll see find in the report that address this. One of them is loyal. Is this these loyalty cards or loyalty shopping? Because that, I think, to John Jones' point, adds to the savings aspect. It adds to people looking for good deals in stores. And the leading loyalty program, according to what people are telling us, is the Pick n Pay Smart Shopper. So it's the leading one in terms of just looking for specials, getting good deals, and being able to or at least feeling as though you get a reward out of your purchase. That's the first one. And the second question that we ask is what influences your shopping decisions, or what influences what you shop for? Now, of course, there's friends and family, which is always in the lead, but what we are finding constantly is constantly high up there is newspaper inserts or broadsheets. So people are actively looking for these deals and where the good ones are, and as such, shopping there if there are good deals there. Because when we were on the ground talking to people, especially at Aponya Mall and other places, and Katlehong as well, is that there are certain times of the month that people are more likely to be at a shopping center or at a shopping mall. It's either during the times of when they get their SASSA payouts or when they want to withdraw money around the end of the month. So that's when they do their big grocery shop. But on the day-to-day, they shop at the local spaza shop. They shop down the road from where they are because you just want bread and milk. But for the big monthly shop, they then look for good deals, loyalty points that reward them, and savings.
And as we end off, we've got 5 minutes left here, chaps. If you were to say, you know, what is the state of the South African consumer right now, given what we saw last week, John, three decade low consumer confidence, that certainly rattled a few cages. Then on the other side of the equation, we've got a big retail mall REIT like Hyprop saying it's seeing its numbers back at pre-pandemic levels. And this is just as the mask mandates have really been officially done away with. So what is your sense, given how closely you follow the numbers, of the health and the state of the South African consumer, which is so vitally important, given that I think just over two-thirds of South Africa's economy is driven by consumption spending?
Yeah, look, I think we know it's challenging for the consumer. I think as consumers ourselves, we can't sit here and say that we aren't rationalizing what we spend on a monthly basis, and we can't say that we don't personally go in and potentially shop slightly differently to how we did in 2019. However, what we do know is that the lower LSM or lower SEM households and consumers, they don't have the ability to cut back anymore. They've continued to have to cut back over the last 4 or 5 years with multiple factors that have influenced them and affected them. So that they're continuing to spend, and we're seeing a little bit of stimulation in that lower LSM space with the social relief grants. It's brought a bit of money back into the economy. Where we are seeing consumers cut back for the first time quite significantly is in the higher LSM households, which really speaks to the fact that it's not just the lower end consumer that's under pressure. It's throughout the consumer set. We foresee this is going to continue. We know that promotions are going to forever be a big thing in South Africa, and we've got research that shows that South Africa is the second most price sensitive market in all the markets that we study. And that really speaks to how over reliant both retailers and producers are on promotions to stimulate sales in the environment. I mean, that has positives for the consumer, but it also has a lot of negatives in terms of brand equity and that. So we're looking at an environment that's significantly under pressure. We know there's continued investment from retailers and producers to soften the blow as much as possible. But the reality is that the consumers are constrained, and they continue to cut back where they can. And again, that does mean bringing spend back into the household as we look to rationalize and make sure that we get the most out of our rands and cents.
And unsurprising that we're seeing a lot of pressure throughout the LSM groups here, as I used to call them, because I think confidence has taken a big smack. We see the equity markets, Chris, come off, and I think wealthier households are just not as confident to go out and spend, and are probably relooking things like their multi-choice subscription and what they're getting from their streamers now. And, you know, that monthly budget is being trimmed and re-looked at. From a retailer perspective, though, the impact here, to build on what John was saying about promotions and how fixated or addicted almost the retailers have become on promotional activity to gain market share, surely that doesn't bode well for margins over the immediate term, because yes, you can gain market share by discounting, but you're going to take a big markets margin smack.
Absolutely. I couldn't have put it better myself. You know, it has to impact on margins. And I mean, you see it in the bottom line performance of the retailers over the past 5 years. It's been absolutely appalling. So even in the companies that have had some decent top line growth, you know, you look into the bottom line growth, it really has been, it's been disastrous over the past 5 years. And I know there's been a pandemic halfway through, but so what? I mean, really, it's been absolutely shocking. So this is not the place that you actually wanted to be as an investor. It's been a terrible place to be. And I think, unfortunately, it's going to carry on being a terrible place to be, because the consumer, to build on what John was saying, is going to remain under extreme pressure for the foreseeable future. I can see no way out, unfortunately.
Mongezi, just as we've got a minute and a half to go, from the Kasi economy perspective, the consumer's obviously under a lot of pressure with rising fuel prices. We've got load shedding stage 6 now. What is your sense on the impact of all of this on consumption in the Kasi economy over the next 6 months?
I think one of the things that we started seeing leading up to the reports and what is potentially going to grow is that people are going to buy smaller and smaller package size items. So, and they're going to probably do so more and more closer to home, which is down the road, either at a spaza shop or whatever the case is. So with that in mind, I'm assuming that big brands will start seeing that as an opportunity and potentially start working more with the informal economy or the informal sector, gathering that useful data and being able to interact and engage with that sector. Because these store owners, these entrepreneurs, are the most influential people in this decision tree that people have, and the types of products they buy, the types of brands they buy, and where they buy them. That's one. And I think the rise that we are going to certainly see is the rise of buying more and more local or locally branded products, because local products have become a lot more premium. They've globalized, they've become international brands, and they've become admired as, or if not more than, international brands have become.
And that'll do more than any buy local campaign ever will, led by the DTIC or Brand South Africa. It's got to be driven by the consumers. They've got to want to go out and purchase local, and we are seeing that in some big decisions being made to support local manufacturing as well. Very interesting, our retail state of the nation. With around the table, we had John Emery, Nielsen IQ retail strategy lead. We also had Mongezi Mtati, brand strategist at Roger Wilco, and our independent retail analyst and Business Day columnist, Chris Gilmore, running the rule over the state of the South African consumer here on Business Watch.